Welcome to this podcast by The Rocks Church. We hope you find it challenging and inspiring. For more information, visit therocks.org.au.
Good morning, everyone. Good to see everyone here, you know, alive and awake, and so good to see you on the second week of our brand new year, 2017. Who has been having a great week so far? A great year so far. Amen. That's great. And welcome to The Rocks. If this is your first time, we would like to say that you are our very special guest. And over here, we have a slogan that we say, no perfect people allowed. And that means that it's okay for you to be not okay at church, because we know that our God is a God who is full of love, full of grace, and we need that grace every day in our lives, and there's nothing impossible. You know, we shouldn't be the same all over our lives. God is the God who is of God of the impossible. So, welcome to The Rocks, and we are in a second part of our series called Times of Our Lives, The Time of Our Lives. And last week, Pastor D was talking about a brand new year of 2017, but it doesn't mean that you bring your new you. Many times, brand new year, but we bring our old self, our old you, to our new year. You bring your old you to your new job. You bring your old you to every new relationship. You bring your you. You bring you into every aspect of our lives. And sometimes we thought that it's going to be spectacular. Turn out it's going to be mediocre sometimes. And you think, I got my dream job, but how come it's not delivering what I hope for? I thought this is going to be the relationship that will change everything. Why has it been so flat, so fast? And I don't understand. You know, this is just the second week of 2017, but how come my life is not different than last year? Then what happens? We don't know how to solve it. We end up putting in time, and we end up just doing time every single week, every single month. And without you realize it, you finish 1 year not knowing where your life has been. So we ask ourselves, you know, is this as good as it gets? So we started last week by starting with a very important values, a very important culture that we need to start to change our year. And Pastor D started, when we look at our marriage, look at our relationship, when we look at our family, when we look at our workplace, well, it's not bad, but it's not great. It's just mediocre. It's just so-so. So Pastor D talked about how to battle mediocrity last week. And the way you battle mediocrity is by engaging your heart. How engaged are you at work? How engaged are you at home? How engaged are you spiritually? How engaged are you? Because if you want to stop being mediocre, you engage your heart. If you have mediocre relationship, it will not be mediocre if you engage your heart. It will either you will end the relationship or it will become great, but it will not be mediocre. If you're struggling with a child, if you're struggling with your parents, if you're struggling with your school, you know, the first thing that we do when we're struggling, we pull back, we disengage, and we struggle and say, we withdraw our hearts from it. And without realizing it, everything becomes so mediocre. But if you engage yourself, you really throw your heart into your marriage, if you throw your heart into your work, if you really throw your heart into your relationship with your important person in your life, siblings, girlfriend, boyfriend, you will see that everything will not be mediocre. It will be great or it will become worse as long as you engage with it. So it's your choice. So that's last week. But this week, we're going to talk about another culture, another value that will, I believe, will change my life and your life as we enter our brand new year, 2017. What we're going to talk about today is make it happen. Everybody say, make it happen. Say to the person next to you, make it happen. Make it happen. I moved to the house that I'm living now, November last year. And we put, like every one of you, if you be honest, you have a room where you put everything in it. And you don't touch it. You put your extra bed, and you just put it there, boxes, you put it there. And in my house, it's my garage. So we've been putting our cars outside, and the garage is full of things. And I said, since November last year, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it in December. and December comes, I'm going to do it. Oh, it's too busy with Christmas production and all. Oh, I'm going to do it in January. But January comes, oh, we're going to deal with budget. We're going to deal with this and February. And you know what? I still haven't done it now. And I believe that that's something so familiar with all of you as well. Like we do have some goals. We do have some tasks that we need to do. But we haven't done it because we said someday, one day, I will do it. But today, I'm talking to myself. I'm talking to you as well. Let's make it happen. Everybody say again, make it happen. Let's make it happen in 2017. And if we do this, if we really embrace this culture, if we really embrace this value, I believe that it will solve something that maybe you haven't been able to solve in your world or in the world. My hope at the end of this series, at the end of this sermon, that you can change the culture of your life, the culture of your family, the culture of your workplace. If you're a leader in your workplace, I believe that if you change your culture inside you, you will change other people's culture as well. So I think in this world, there are three kinds of people when it comes to make it happen. People who make it happen, people who watch it happen, people who wonder what happened. You know, those kind of people, right? They say, what's happening? What? Okay, we want to be the kind of people at the Rocks that makes it happen. We want to be the kind of people, the kind of husbands, the kind of wife, the kind of sons and daughters, the kind of workers, the kind of boss that make it happen. And I think we're born out of the necessity to make it, to make something happen. And we don't want to lose that. As a church, we don't want to lose the fact that every one of you has sacrificed so many times, so many financial resources to make things happen in this church. We believe that we want to be the largest that will continue to grow, that unchurched people love to attend, that not only people who are already inside the faith, but people who are outside the faith, so they can find out the great news of God's truth, of God's love, His grace. In fact, it's going to be even more important for us to embrace the culture of make it happen in the future than it has been ever before in our past. So, but we live in a culture around you, around me, that a lot of people just watch it happen. They just don't care if it's mediocre. I know in retail, for example, there are things that frustrate me. Every single time you go to Kohl's or Woolies and you walk in with your trolley, and there's these people who walk right in the middle, so you can't really overtake that person and take really slow time and go zigzag. And that really frustrates me in doing groceries. But you know, another thing that really annoys me in retail is when you go and ask for a specific item, maybe in Bunnings or maybe somewhere else, Target or Kmart, and you say, and they said, oh, if we have it, it should be in that aisle. And that really drives me crazy, don't you? Doesn't that drive you crazy? It's like there are thousands of items there. Can you just help me to find it? Or maybe you can check it where it is and show it to me. That drives me nuts. And but you know what? I've seen a lot of people who have that kind of value and culture of make it happen. A few years ago, I went to holiday with my wife and my son, and my second son, who is still a baby. We stayed in this hotel, so I'm not going to mention the hotel. I don't promote any hotel. So it's GH, okay, that's by the way. And we went there, and my baby boy, we had some items that we need to prepare, the milk bottles and all, and then we asked one of the person, can you help us to bring us like hot water or anything so that we can prepare our food for our kids. And you know what? They go above and beyond. Not only they bring us a kettle, not only they brought us a thermos so we can keep our hot water in there, but they offer to wash every single baby needs that we have. And that was like, wow, this is awesome. This person, this particular person, make things happen. Not only do what he or she needs to do, but go above and beyond and make things happen. I believe that you have experienced customer service like that, and you said, wow, I'll be back. I'll come back here. And that's the kind of thing that you tell stories to people when you experience good things, good customer service. That is incredible. In our church as well, I've seen so many volunteers, so many leaders who have this kind of attitude, can have this value and culture that says, I'm going to make things happen. If you don't know, in 2010, we renovated our facility in Manning Road. And then it was completed. Like, you can fit about 275 people. And it was fully renovated. And then we were like happy. And then the council said, we give you 2 years permit to use it, because this is a commercial zone, so you only can have 2 years. And we're praying that we can extend it another 2 years, and maybe we'll make it permanent so we can be there forever. And that's what we thought. But at the end of those 2 years, the council gave us a letter that said, you have to move from this building, and you can't use this building anymore for public worship. And we were like so desperate. We were so afraid. We were so fearful, and we didn't know what to do. We didn't know where to go. And then we know that God has called us to be in this city of Canning, particularly in Cannington. So we don't know, God, what should we do? And as a whole church, we pray together for the following 30 days. We're going to pray and fast so that God will show us what we need to do. In the first week, you know, one of our leaders, Simon, he's actually actively looking. He's a real estate agent. And then he said, I'm going to look for available land in this area. We've been looking for a lot of storage, warehouse around this area. And the place is not ideal for us to have a church, either parking or noise. So we were like, what do we need to do? During that prayer, time of prayer, but one person actually looked for actively around this Cannington area and asked the owner of every single land that is available in Cannington. And one person said, yeah, actually, I'm interested to sell. And the land is not on market yet. And then he said, I'm gonna meet with your pastor. So to make the story short, we ended up getting this land, 14,000 square meters, under the value of the market. Under the market value. And we were like so grateful, because we have a lot of people in our church, our volunteers and leaders, who make things happen. They don't wait for other people to do. They do it. They make it happen. So we made it happen as a church. And we eventually making sure that every single thing that we do, we want to do it with excellence. We want to create the church that unchurched people love to attend. And we have to figure out, we have to make it happen, because we run for the last 12 years, obstacle after obstacle, that we just had to figure out how to make it work. But we live in a culture where very little things happen, because so many people just kind of watch what happened and wonder what happened. So here's the question that I want you to wrestle with in the beginning of 2017. Why there are so little things get done? Why does so little things get done? Why do you set goals for yourself? Why do you set goals for your organization, for your family, and there's only little things get done? Why do you go to your job that you don't like? Why do you go home to a home whose culture you don't enjoy? The reason is because you're waiting for someone, somewhere, to do something, somehow. Because you're waiting for someone, somewhere, to do something, somehow. Isn't that true? Most of us go to work and say, well, someone will deal with that. You go to church and see your rubbish somewhere. Well, someone will pick that up and put it in the rubbish bin. And we go somewhere at home, and then we see underwear everywhere. And then, my wife will do that. And, my husband will do that. And we wish somebody will fix that. We wish somebody would deal with that in our neighborhood. Oh, maybe my neighbor will do that. I wish somebody will call somebody. I wish somebody somewhere will do something somehow. And when you're waiting for someone to do it, what you really mean is that you're waiting for no one to do it. That's why so little get done. Because when you say, I'm going to wait for someone to do it, you really mean that, what you really mean is you're waiting for no one to do it. Because here's the reality. When you say someone, that actually translates to nobody. If you're waiting for someone to fix your marriage, probably nobody is going to fix your marriage. If you're waiting for someone to make it better with your kids, relationship with your kids, with your parents, with your siblings, probably nobody is going to fix it. If you're waiting for someone to somehow get your grades better in uni or at school, they're probably not going to improve. If you're waiting for someone to launch the church that unchurched people love to attend, it may not happen. We're going to make it happen. In fact, someone, somehow, somewhere, and someday, the someday is a very dangerous word. Someday is the graveyard of far too many dreams, both your dreams and God's dreams. Because we say, someday I'll do that. Someday I'll do that. So here's the question I want you to wrestle. The second one is, if you don't make it happen, who will? If you don't make it happen, who will? See, I think that God doesn't put you in this world for an accident. I don't think God placed you in this church by an accident. If you came here and something's bothering you, something's very mediocre in your life, something's very stuck in your life, something's very bad, and there's a need that not being met, there's a problem that's not going to be unsolved. If you don't make it happen, who will? Here's another question, and I hope this will bother you and keeps you up at night. What desperately needs to be done in your life, in your world, or in the world that you see no one else addressing? What desperately needs to be done in your world or in the world that you see no one else addressing? It might be your marriage. It might be so flat. It used to be spicy. It used to be interesting. It used to be great. But I'm waiting for him to take the first move. I'm waiting for her to take the first move. I'm waiting for him to take the lead. What desperately needs to be done in your world that no one else addressing? Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's at work. You just hate Mondays. And the reason you hate Mondays is because somebody somewhere, somehow, will do something someday to fix that very thing that drives you nuts. What if that someone whom you're waiting for is you? What if that someone that you're waiting for is you? What if that's the case? What if that's what is in the world that you look out in the world and say, why hasn't anyone addressing this? Why won't anyone do something for these kids? Why won't anybody do something for these people? What if that someone is actually you? Because we sit around and say, maybe someday, somewhere, somehow, somebody will do it. Maybe someone will do what I wish someone will do. You are uniquely positioned in this life by God, not just to be a mediocre person. God has placed you in your family, in your workplace, in this church, in this community, because God wants to do something through you. So that we need to have that kind of culture and value that says, I'm going to make it happen. I'm not going to wait for other people to do it. I'm going to make it happen. What if that somebody that you're waiting for is you? I've got a great story in the Bible I want to share with you before we're done today. It's a story you know, very famous, and even if you've never read the Bible, if you're new to Christianity, you've never read the Bible, you probably know this story because it's so powerful, it's so famous. In fact, the expression of the Goliaths and the Davids of the world are very famous because it's come from the Bible if you don't know. So this story, maybe you heard as a kid, but you've never really read as an adult. It's a powerful story. There's two nations at war, the Israelites and the Philistines. And they camped out across from each other. In between them, there's a valley. They're ready to go battle. And that's where we pick up the story from 1 Samuel chapter 17. If you bring your Bible or your mobile phones, go to 1 Samuel chapter 17, or the verse will be on the screen as well for you to follow me. We're going to start from verse 1. The Philistines now mustered their army for battle and camped between Socoh in Judah and Azekah as at Ephes Damim. It actually belonged to Damim. Ephes Damim, that's right. Go to the previous one. Yeah, Damim owns that. Verse 2. Saul countered by gathering his Israelite troops near the valley of Elah. So the Philistines and the Israelites faced each other on opposite hills with the valley between them. So you see the setup, one nation here, one nation there. valiant between them. But now look what happened. Then Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath, came out of the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. That's 2.8 meters. That's like twice my height. I'm only 150. No, kidding. Twice my height. Okay, just imagine this person is twice my height and looking over you and looking down on you. What are you doing? And that's Goliath. He's almost twice my height, and he wore a bronze helmet, and his bronze coat of mail weighed 125 pounds, which is 57 kilograms. Imagine carrying things on your body, 57 kilograms. He's so enormous and strong. He also wore bronze leg armor, and he carried a bronze javelin on his shoulder. The shaft of his spear was as heavy and thick as a weaver's beam, tipped with an iron spearhead, the spearhead that weighed 7 kilograms. Just the spearhead is 7 kilograms. His armor bearer walked ahead of him, carrying a shield. Goliath stood and shouted a taunt across the Israelites. He taunted the Israelites. Maybe he was doing haka, you know, kumate, kumate, ku. And rah, rah. Why are you all coming out to fight? He said. He called, why do you bother to come here? Why are you even bother me? Look at me. See, the Philistine had me. Who do you have? Nobody. Yeah, nobody. And he said, I'm the Philistine champion, but you are only the servants of Saul. Choose one man to come down and fight me. If he kills me, then we will be your slaves. As simple as that. But if I kill him, you will be our slaves. I defy the armies of Israel today. Send me a man who will fight me. And everybody were trembling. Everybody so afraid. They were fearful. See, this is the reason why a lot of people never make things happen. Never make anything happen. You're looking at your marriage. You're looking at your job. You're looking at the problem in the culture. You're looking at the problem in your community, in our nation, the problem in the world. And you're going, I don't have any money. I don't have any extra time. There are so many obstacles. There are so many difficulties. There are so many challenges. I mean, it's so big. It's so huge. I don't think I could possibly do that. I don't think there's anything I could do. I don't think there's any impact I could make. And that's when I start to think about it. I got scared. And look at this. When Saul, verse 11, and the Israelites heard this, they were terrified and deeply shaken. Anytime you're trying to solve a problem that's big, if you're trying to solve the God's way, I think you're going to end up and deeply shaken. You know, when the council sent us that letter, you have to evict this property less than a month. And you can't use this for a church anymore. We were trembling. We didn't know what to do. But I promise you, we were terrified and we were deeply shaken. We didn't have any idea what to do. But we believe that God, who has started the good things in our church, will finish it according to His will. We didn't know that this will happen. We didn't know that we will be across the street from Carousel. And if you haven't been scared and shaken and terrified by a goal, by a dream, maybe your goal, your dream is not big enough. If you're not scared, if you're not shaken, if you're not nervous about it, about your goals, maybe your goals is not big enough. And in fact, if God gives you the goal, if God gives you a goal, an ambition or a dream, chances are it actually will terrify you and it will shake you. Because you'll go, I'm not ready for this. And that's the sign. Maybe God's in it. When God said, oh, you need me. I'm going to show myself strong. When you said, God, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to accomplish this. And God said, don't worry. I'm with you. Because this dream, this goal is the one that I give for you to do. And there's only one person in the Israelites who got it. A boy named David. And David was not a man. He was a boy. He was less than 17 years. Now David was the son of a man named Jesse. Verse 12. An Ephrathite from Bethlehem in the land of Judah. Jesse was an old man at that time and he had 8 sons. David was not only a son, He was the youngest son. He's the baby of the family. Who's the baby of the family here? Any one of you? Baby of the family? Don't you hate it when people, oh, you're the baby of the family. You know, Jesse's oldest sons, Eliab, Abinadab, and Shema, just had already joined Saul's army to fight the Philistines. Verse 14. David was the youngest son. David's three oldest brothers stayed with Saul's army, but David went back and forth so that he could help his father with the sheep in Bethlehem. For 40 days, he went back and forth. Every morning and evening, the Philistine champion strutted in front of the Israelite army. Every single day, he saw this same thing happen for 40 days. People are trembling because of this one guy, Goliath. As he was talking with them, Goliath, verse 23, the Philistine champion from Gath came out from the Philistine ranks. So for the very first time now, David happens to be there at the time when Goliath taunt the Israelites again. Then David heard him shout his usual taunt to the army of Israel and mocking the God of Israel. And that's the first time David heard it. Verse 24. As soon as the Israelite army saw him, they began to run away in fright. And maybe some of you have been doing this. You know what you're supposed to do, but you're so scared, so you ran away. You ran away from your work. You ran away from your responsibilities. You ran away from your family. You ran away from your wife, from your relationship. I'm not going to get the relationship better. I'm not going to approach her. I'm not going to approach him. I'm not going to make the phone call. I'm not going to be the one who does something at work. I'm not going to be the one who's going to start this. I'm not going to be the one who's going to make right what I did wrong. That's what the Israelites did. They ran away in fright. Verse 25, have you seen the giant? The man asked. Do you know how difficult this is? Do you know how big the problem is? Do you know how unsolvable it is? He comes out each day to defy Israel. The king has offered a huge reward to anyone who kills him. We're just desperate. We'll take anybody. Anyone wants to fight him? Nobody would. He will give that man one of his daughters. The king will give one of his daughters for a wife, and the man's entire family will be exempted from paying taxes. Now all of you, all of a sudden, become so interested. Oh, you don't have to pay tax? Wow. Verse 26. David asked the soldiers standing nearby, what will a man get for killing this Philistine and ending his defiance of Israel? But then he asked a more important question. Who is this pagan? Some other translation said, pagan, uncircumcised Philistine anyway, that he's allowed to defy the armies of the living God. It's a great question, he sees it. He's 9 feet tall, 3 meters tall, but we're dealing with God. We're dealing with God, the creator of everything, the creator of this giant as well. We even have the piece of story that David doesn't know. That David didn't know. God would come in a human form in Jesus, that he would conquer death. So what can they do? They can only kill us. I think we have a Savior who has solved that problem. So if David didn't know that God will come in the form of human in Jesus, he was so brave. How much more us? We already know that Jesus has conquered the grave. He has conquered death. We should not be afraid. Verse 27, and this man gave David the same reply. They said, yes, that is the reward for killing him. Verse 31, then David's question was reported to King Saul, and the king sent for him. Don't worry about this Philistine, David told Saul. I'll go fight him. And Saul said, don't be ridiculous. There's no way you can fight this Philistine and possibly win. You're only a boy. You're only a baby. He's been a man of war since his youth. He's got a lifetime on you, and he's bigger than you. But David persisted. Look at my resume. I have been taking care of my father's sheep and goats. Sheep and goats, yes. When a lion or a bear comes to steal a lamb from the flock, I go after it with a club and rescue the lamb from its mouth. If the animal turns on me, I catch it by the jaw and club it to death. Look what he does. He said, God has given me some success in a little tiny areas of my life. I did well at school, so maybe I can do well here as well. Look at his attitude. Look at his heart attitude that says, God has given me some wins in the past, and he will be with me as well here, fighting this Goliath. I have done this to both lions and bears, and I'll do this to this pagan Philistine too, for he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord, this is so big, who has rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from this Philistine. Do you have a season in your life where you know for sure that God was with you on that situation, in that situation, and if it's not because of God's grace, if it's not because of God's power, I wouldn't be here right now. And you were so sure that God was with you. Yes, God gave me the strength to do that. Stand up for yourself, to reach out to somebody, take a risk, and God was with you in that moment. If you realize that God has done that in the past, what made you think that he will not do that in the present and also in the future? God's faithfulness, if you forgot anything what I said today, remember this. God's faithfulness in the past is evidence of his faithfulness in the future. God's faithfulness in the past is evidence of his faithfulness in the future. The Lord has been faithful in the past, so let's go for it. If you're waiting for somebody, someday, somewhere, and somehow to do something, maybe that someone you're waiting for is you. If you want to twist that, maybe that somebody God is waiting for is you. So what should you do? Back to the question, what desperately needs to be done in your world and in the world that you see no one else addressing? What needs to be done in the world? What relationship needs to be fixed? Well, I'm waiting for him to make the call. Well, I'm waiting for her to take the initiative. Maybe you need what you need to do, husbands. You need to go home. You need to take your wife to dinner on Friday night. And you're saying, well, there hasn't been any romance in the relationship for forever. But, well, maybe that's because of you. Take the initiative and make it happen. Maybe you haven't talked to somebody you need to talk to in years. Well, he has never called me. Well, my mom hasn't called me ever. Pick up the phone and call. Make things happen. When desperately needs to be, what desperately needs to be done in your world, make it happen. Or maybe it's not in your world thing. Maybe it's the world thing. Maybe that's something that bothers you, that drives you crazy every single time you see a Facebook feed about that particular subject. Or maybe you watch the news and that really bothers you. Somebody has to do something about it. Maybe that somebody is you. So what desperately needs to be done in your world or in the world that you're seeing no one else is addressing? And then what will you do about it? Because somebody gonna make something happen. And maybe that somebody is you. I want to ask the music team to come forward. I want to challenge you again with that question. What will you do about it? Things will not change by itself. You need to make it happen. And if you're afraid, if you're fearful, you don't have the resources, you don't have the time, you don't know what to say, what to do, let me tell you, God, who has been faithful in your life in the past, the same God, he's with you. He's for you. He's for your marriage. He's for your relationship. He's for your dreams. He's for your future. Don't be afraid. Don't hesitate. Don't wait for someone else to do it. You do it. Make it happen. I'm telling myself, make it happen. So if someone wants to help me to clean up my garage, you'll be more than welcome. But ask that question again. What desperately needs to be done in your world and no one else has taken any action? Maybe that's you. That's your role.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. For more great resources and to keep yourself up to date, head to our website, therocks.org.au.